Derek, it's like it's the Fast and Furious 8.
Go on.
It seems like once a year, about this time of year, we do the same exact show.
Let's see. We're playing kind of well in January. We're flirting with it. February, we fall way the hell out of the playoffs and think that it's completely impossible. And then wouldn't you know it, there's an 8-game point streak to put us just within sniffing range if everything goes right.
Yeah. So you've seen this movie. Would you like to enjoy the matinee?
Spoiler alert, we don't make the playoffs.
Oh, so you have seen this movie.
I have.
It's a tough movie to watch, but it's a movie that we often enjoy every spring here in Caniac Nation. Again, just all of the sudden, 8-game point streak, Jeff Skinner playing like a world beater.
Mm-hmm.
Elias Lindholm not receiving the wrath of this podcast.
No, I mean, shit, he's got 32 points in his last 35 games. But then, you know, every good movie, you have to have the antagonist. And you know who the antagonists are in this picture, Mike?
I can guess.
They are the people who are bitching and moaning about the fact that, oh no, the Canes might not pick 4th overall. We may pick 9th overall. Who cares? At that, like, who cares?
And particularly in this year's draft. I mean, it is such a crapshoot that there's decent players at the top, and we'll get to draft talk soon enough. We'll get our normal friends. We'll get Mr. Seidel back on the podcast, and we'll go to our friends up at recruits.ca again and have all of them on the podcast. But for now, Derek, let's focus on hope.
Yes.
As we sit here tonight, Thursday night, Carolina Hurricanes currently taking on the Montreal Canadiens. Yes, sir, with your hand raised on an audio-only podcast.
May I provide an in-game update?
Please do, sir.
Because we even got a request tonight for a live in-game update.
Do, 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 do.
It gets no more liver than this for a recorded program with 13:20 to go in the second period. The Canes are tied with Montreal at 1 goal apiece, and they're leading in shots 10-8.
Ooh, 10-8. So I believe it was 10-5 after the first period. So to say that it has been a the start of the second period has been a little slow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Been a little kind of like the start of this podcast.
Yeah,
yeah. Just steady, not mm-hmm. bad. Yeah, you know, this is kind of like a 1-1 tie in Montreal. Hopefully.
No, it very much is a 1-1 tie in Montreal.
With the help of our guest, we can pull ahead. I do not believe we have any Ryan Murphy-like guest this season where we're putting them on just so that way we don't have to have them on next season.
Okay.
We've got some really good guests on tonight. We've actually got Melissa Burgess on, who covers the NWHL and does a great job of catching us up on what was a really fun NWHL season, as well as shares her views of a little bit of Buffalo hockey and just general hockey knowledge. She was great to talk to.
And she didn't throw a pint glass at us, which was, you know, a step up.
Which was nice. We also had one of our favorites on. And we were talking about this. I'm pretty sure we had this guy on one day when Canalytics was covering for when you had something much more important to do or may have been dead.
Okay. Well, that would explain why I didn't remember it then.
Yeah, we had Prashant Iyer on as well tonight. He is from Winging It in Motown, the SB Nation blog for the Detroit Red Wings, and absolutely one of our most favorite analytics follows. So Prashant comes on to talk a little bit about the state of the Red Wings, the coach that got away, and what it's going to take for GM Ron Francis to trade for Tommy Tater.
Tommy Tater.
So good. If you take Tommy Tatar and you ferment him, does it become Tommy Vodka?
I guess so. I was really afraid you were going to make some kind of horrible Tatar sauce reference.
That would be horrible. I would never do something like that.
No, leave that to me.
Derek, I only have one thing to say to that.
What's that?
First, rapidoo, and two, hit the X button.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Cheaters Never Win podcast, another fine product of Section 328.com. Here you'll find all the Hurricanes hockey talk, adult beverage reviews, and snark a growing body needs. Follow us on Twitter at Section_328. Respect the underscore. And now back to Derek and Mike.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Voice, for welcoming us back here. And you know, we talk a lot about, you know, welcome back, Derek and Mike, but it's not just us. We're the two voices here on the podcast, but there's a lot of folks here in the 328 family, Derek. And this week, the family grew just a little.
It most certainly did, and it grew in existentialism, depending on how much you may follow her on Twitter. But Meg Palmer at Love and Hydrogen is officially part of the Section 328 family now. Please follow her on Twitter. Please enjoy her musings on the blog. She is really good people, and rumor has it, knows where to get some really good Korean barbecue.
Ooh, I like that. So, you know, between us and then, you know, we've got Kane's Prospects, we've got Kanelytics, we've got Mr. Workrate.
JC.
We've got JC delivering some puck and sunshine. Dan Spencer drinking more beer than, you know, one young man probably should. We've got Raleigh Monkey out there, who's the kinder side of Section 328, running the Facebook page. So we've got this whole family here, and it is a blast. If only we had a way to support the family, Derek.
Oh, but Mike, we have two phenomenal ways. If you enjoy our work, and you know this, we enjoy our work as well, I encourage you to head on over to section328.com, hit that little button that says become a patron, and support us on Patreon. That money comes to help support this podcast, because hosting isn't free, neither is equipment, and so we can kick a few coins over to this 328 family that we love so much. Another way that doesn't cost you a single dime.
No, are you saying it is the cheap cost of free 99?
It is free 99.
So I like that.
Patreon comes with rewards too. You can get t-shirts and coffee mugs and all kinds of cool stuff through that. On Amazon, click that little buy on Amazon button, because you shop on Amazon, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We're human. We shop on Amazon.
Just click through that link. Amazon as you would normally Amazon, and they will throw a percentage our way so we can help take care of the crew that helps you know, fill up your day with lots of delightful Hurricanes content.
And hopefully, if we can fill up enough of the 328 coffers, we're going to take at least some of the Section 328 crew out to Chicago to cover this year's National Hockey League entry draft, which could be a lot of fun and always leads to not only great stories, but a swath of brand new podcast guests for the upcoming seasons, because we make friends with people who drink at hockey events.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So we appreciate all the support, whether it's through Amazon, through Patreon, through interacting with us on Twitter, or coming to say hello at a game. It is all appreciated, because we do this for the love as well.
Yeah. It's a lot of, well, not just the love of us, but the love of hockey.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I'd love my own voice, but people knew that. I mean, that's pretty obvious.
Mike, may I say, speaking of loving your voice, I will not be the first, and I certainly won't be the last to say, hell of a job that you did emceeing the St. Baldrick's event last week. Team Tony, the Hurricanes, and you and everybody else who came out and helped that day helped raise over $35,000 to tell childhood cancer to go suck eggs.
Yes, it was an amazing day. Anytime Tony Price reaches out to me and says, hey, Mike, I need your help in the fight. The Section 328 team is right there to support. And St. Baldrick's is one of our absolute favorite events. So it was an honor to be asked to help the Canes and Tony MC such a great event. Over 100 heads were shaved. And again, over $36,000 was raised, Derek. I know we crossed the $36,000 mark.
Even better.
And it was just, it was so much fun. And there was a young man out there. His name was Hunter. And he was one of the guys who was featured on the screen when they kind of, during the third period, they honored the Lenovo heroes. And Hunter had just finished his last chemo treatment. And it was just one of those things that kind of got you all a little bit welled up. And it was good to have him be part of a celebration, because St. Baldrick's continues to fight the good fight. But what they do day in and day out is just absolutely amazing. And again, big shout out to Tony Price, who has now been involved and helping the Canes with this event for now 8 seasons and raised an absolute ton of money. Tony did throw a challenge out to me, though.
He threw a hell of a challenge out, and he threw it out on TV that night too, but for those who may not have seen it, what was that challenge, Mike?
for the first time ever, Tony wants the Kane St. Baldrick event next year to top $100,000. And if this crew has anything to say about it,
let's do it.
I think we're doing it.
Let's do it.
So that's it, guys.
If Dan Spencer's listening to this, Dan, get involved with this one. Because for those who don't know, Dan Spencer has run his own St. Baldrick's event at Natty Greens in years past, and he has helped raise tremendous amounts of money. So if we can combine all of the people that love beating cancer to come together, we can make it happen.
Yeah, it's going to be good. What we may not be able to make happen is a playoff run. And you know, it's kind of scary, Derek, because all of us who are season ticket holders, you know,
members, Mike, members.
Season ticket members, thank you. My apologies to Sarah Daniel, head of ticket operations over at the Hurricanes.
You did get your members only jacket, right?
I did. Okay. I did. It didn't fit. But as season ticket members, when we got the invoices for our seats for next season, basically, you know, there was an option in there to pay for playoff tickets, but basically it said, just ignore that and give us your money for next year's tickets, which I believe most of us have at this point. But there's this little thing in the back of my head that's now going, you know, I didn't budget for playoff tickets.
You checked the box that said, lol, nah.
Yeah. Nah, I'm good. Nah, bro, I'm good. For those of you who are Caniacs and have season tickets, and if the Canes pull off some sort of miraculous run, which they would need to beat Montreal to do it, in-game update, Derek, with 8:28 left in the period, it is still 1-1. Canes still leading in shots, 13-9, and Elias Lindholm is on the ice, so odds of a goal and an assist are currently increased.
Okay. So you were saying the Canes need to go on some kind of miraculous run. So we have 11 games remaining, including this one against Montreal.
Correct.
We need to win 9?
I think you need at minimum 18 points, 19 points. We're at 75 points right now. I think it's going to take 94 at least.
Mm-hmm.
So we would need 19 points out of the next 11 games, counting tonight.
So that would be, worst case, 9-1-1 record.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. The Canes just need to do 9-1-1.
With Pittsburgh thrown in there, the Islanders in there, Dallas is in there. Dallas hasn't been that great. Couple of games against Detroit, so that's not too bad.
No.
It's
not happening.
Yeah, it's not happening. My bank account may thank me.
Mm-hmm.
Because if all of a sudden I get that invoice that said, oh, the Canes made it in on game 82. By the way, we need $1,500 tomorrow for your playoff tickets.
When have the Canes gone into the playoffs in game 82? We've sure as shit come out of it a few times.
Oh, my God. Imagine the feeling. Like, I mean, it would
Can we be playing, like, Tampa or Florida, please, in game 82? And
yeah, I mean, oh, God. It would only be good if we could knock them out. So now, Derek, you're going to make me bring up the schedule.
You're
going
to have to do work.
Yeah, I'm going to have to do work. Let's take a look at the schedule here. Derek, soft shoe for a bit for me, will you?
So I think our last game is it at Philly?
It's at somewhere. I know we finish on the road. Let's take a quick gander here at the schedule. Again, at Montreal tonight, game against Jersey on Saturday. That should be a winnable game. And then Detroit. Oh.
Lumbus.
NHL best, almost Lumbus. Dallas in the igloo.
It's no longer the igloo. It hasn't been the igloo for years, Mike.
In the igloo. In Minnesota.
Mm.
Isle St. Louis at home. And then close the season on the 9th in Philly. Mm-hmm. So, let's say we've got 11 games left. We know that there's two near definite L's between Columbus and Pittsburgh.
Yep.
So that would be 9-0-2. That's 18 points. That would get us to 93 points. I don't think 93 points gets us there. I think what you have to do, Derek.
Well, the other thing too, Mike, is we have to jump 3 teams. It's not like we just need Boston to falter. We need Boston to falter. We need Philly to mess up. And who the other team.
So that makes that last. If Philly isn't one of those teams that completely falters.
Jesus. Stop. Just stop it. Mike.
In
Just
Philadelphia,
stop.
Game 82.
Pivotal?
Winner goes to the playoff. Loser goes home. Derek, if that were to happen, I think I'd have to go to Philly.
Yeah, well, here's the cool part, Mike. You don't.
So, okay, I'm going to say it right now. If we play the Saturday night game, the last game of the season, after the last home tailgate, which we'll talk about the tailgate near the end of the podcast. It's going to be a blowout, by the way. If we are in a position to clinch a playoff berth by beating Philly in Philly at game 82, I say we sleep off the little bit of hangover that'll be left from that home win. We get up at 6 a.m. in the morning. We take two vehicles. We pile as many people as we can in them, legally possible, counting the seatbelts, and we caravan our asses to Philadelphia.
Okay, let's totally plan on it and then totally ignore it, because by the middle of next week, it'll be completely moot.
You're probably right. But what if, Derek? Can't we dream?
We can dream, Mike. But remember how we started this podcast? We've seen this movie before.
But we have a new star, and that star's name is Jeff Skinner.
No, we've had him for years.
And we have a new...
Jeff Skinner knows this movie well.
We have a new co-star. His name is Sebastian Aho.
Okay, he is new. He is new to the picture.
So, let's see. Looking at Boston's schedule, this is horrible.
Mike, why are you doing this? Don't do this to yourself. Don't do this to our listeners.
Nashville,
let's talk about
Chicago,
the games that we have won.
Washington, and Ottawa, all on their schedule skill. That's four L's. There's a chance, Derek.
No, I mean,
it's a chance.
Yes, there's a chance. I mean, I think our buddy Prashant would say there's a chance. You know, it's mathematically possible, but is it probable? Is it sustainable? Certainly not.
We can't sustain this level of podcasting. I think we need to go to our first guest of the evening. And welcome to this week's episode of the podcast, Derek. And I think this is the first time ever we've ever had someone from the beautiful city of Buffalo, New York on the podcast that we have not been forced to treat as a hostile witness.
I think that's correct.
Yeah, this is someone who has been requested for quite some time to come on the podcast, and she was kind enough to join us this evening. Melissa Burgess, who works for the Victory Press, works with the Junior Sabres, and also of melissaburgess.com. Melissa, thanks for joining us here on Cheaters Never Win. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
You know, we are phenomenal. First question, Rasmus Ristolainen, dirty cheater, dirty, dirty cheater.
You know, I was actually at the game the other night when the hit happened. I thought it wasn't great. I don't know that it deserved a 3-game suspension, considering worse infractions have gotten less. But Gensel did get hurt from the hit, and I think that did contribute to the length of the suspension. He kind of went down, and then when he tried to get back up, you could see he fell right back down, and you knew something was not right. So I think that played a factor, and the Sabres will just have to deal the next 3 games without him.
Well, we will not ever be confused with people who would wish luck upon the Sabres, but we will say congratulations to your hometown team, the Buttes, on winning the NWHL championship over the, I would guess, overwhelmingly favored Boston Pride based on their season record.
Absolutely. The Buttes kind of went into that game, you know, definitely as the underdog, but that's the beauty of a single game playoff is anything can happen. All you need is one strong game, one strong performance, and you saw what happened. They won.
Yeah, and your goaltender made 60 saves, which to me seems absurd. I don't know how that seemed to you.
You know, Brian McLaughlin has faced a lot of shots previously, especially in the first season for the Buttes. Early on last year when they were kind of still getting their team together, they were letting other teams get 40, 50 shots on goal. So there were definitely some games there where she had to face similar numbers. Not so much this season, really. They didn't allow as many shots like that as often, but it's Boston. It's the, you know, all the national team players and everything. So you've kind of got to expect that. But she played lights out, and she definitely deserved the MVP for that game.
Yeah, it's amazing just how important goaltending is in this sport. As we here in Carolina just bow our heads and do another year of Cam Ward. So it was an interesting season this year in the NWHL, kind of from a business perspective, Melissa, and there was some salary issues and that type of thing as the season began. And now we're facing another stand, and a stand that I think is just very, very right by the U.S. Women's National Team. So I'd love to get your take from somebody who follows the NWHL on a daily basis. You know, what's kind of the future for the league, and how does, if anything, this stand that the U.S. Women's National Team is making today kind of play into the league play for the next couple of years?
Well, I think the NWHL has always said that it wants to continue to pay the players. You know, it doesn't want to, you know, not pay the players all of a sudden or anything like that. I think next season will be very interesting to see how they go about salaries. I don't think maybe the salaries will be as high as they were this season. Not that they were really high by any regular standards, but they had to do that pay cut, as you said, in the season. And obviously they didn't want to have to do that, but they had to do what they had to do to sustain the league, to keep going. Hopefully with, you know, the more promotion and a season, two seasons now under their belts, they can get some more major sponsors besides just Dunkin' Donuts. They've been a great sponsor, obviously, but they need a little bit more support financially to be able to continue to pay the players. And I think that ties into the U.S. Women's National Team, because it's all about equality and, you know, making a livable wage. Most NWHLers obviously cannot afford to live on just what they're being paid by their team. They have sometimes second, sometimes even third jobs. And the U.S. Women's National Team is kind of in that position where they're looking to get a salary, not just for the 6 months of the year that come right before the Olympics, but for, you know, those 4 years in between the Olympics. Because really, if you think about it, they're not just training for the 6 months before their Olympics. They're training year-round, 365 days a year in terms of nutrition and exercise and taking care of their bodies and everything. So they, you know, obviously I stand with them, and they absolutely deserve the money. I will say that literally just before we started talking tonight, the news came out that USA Hockey is looking for replacement players for the World Championships. Supposedly players from the NWHL, the Minnesota Whitecaps, and college players have been contacted. And it's been really disheartening watching the back and forth on this. USA Hockey said they were going to work with the women and, you know, try to rectify the issue. And now all of a sudden they were supposed to start training camp this week. They were supposed to have a practice or a game tomorrow, and they had to cancel those things. And now they've turned to looking for replacement players.
Yeah, that's certainly not good. I think the only good that may come out of that is if Keanu Reeves has a sister and wants to make a movie in 20 years about replacement players in women's hockey, then there could be something coming out of that. I wanted to ask you a question because I am admittedly ignorant to a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff in the NWHL, and it's maybe something that could help our listeners out. It's pretty well established that the NBA is very invested in the WNBA and has helped that league through a lot of financial tough times. What, if any, sort of relationship does the NHL have with the NWHL, whether it is official, if there's anything where there's some kind of investment to help grow the game and get the players some sort of living wage so it's not just resting on the back of, like you said, Dunkin' Donuts?
Right. So as far as I'm aware, or as far as has been made public, there really is no direct connection between the NHL and the NWHL. Obviously, there's a lot more that gets tied into that, including the fact that the CWHL also exists. So, you know, basically the NWHL is not going to partner with both women's leagues. Probably eventually down the line, you would look at, you know, just having one league, and then the NHL would probably, you know, be more likely to support that. But there are a lot of factors that people have to consider when thinking about a merger. The two leagues are run in very different ways. The CWHL currently does not pay its players. The NWHL does. The CWHL is also much more established. They've been around for 10 seasons, whereas, you know, the NWHL is much newer. I think on an individual team level, perhaps there could be a little bit more support of the NWHL. Just recently, the Buffalo Sabres had the Buttes at their game on Tuesday night when they played the Penguins. They honored the Buttes during the first period for the Isabel Cup Championship. They had them signing autographs before the game. And that was really great to see. And that was really one of the first big public partnerships. I don't want to say partnerships because it's really not. But that was one of the first big things that the Sabres ever really did concerning the Buttes. And it was great to see it. And I hope that continues into next season, because that's the way this league is going to survive. Not maybe not even just with a financial or a we're going to give you money kind of standpoint, but from a publicity and an advertising standpoint, it's huge to get these women out in front of more people, encourage more people to go to the games, and just frankly let them know the league exists. I was at the table where the Buttes were signing on Tuesday, and you know, a lot of people came up and they did know, oh, you're the Buttes, congratulations, you won. But there were also a lot of people who came up and had no idea that the team existed or that the league existed. So just getting them in front of people and having them say, this is what we do, this is our league, and you know, this is our cup that we just won. We won the Stanley Cup, quote unquote, of the NWHL. It's just a huge advertising piece.
Well, and you know, we're fortunate down here in Raleigh that we actually have a member of the NWHL, calls Raleigh their hometown, Aaron Barley Maloney, who I believe still plays for the New York Riveters, and my wife proudly supports her and that jersey. Aaron actually did a skating clinic during the off season here to a ton of support, and it was great to see. But for those of us who are in the remote markets and love hockey of every flavor, regardless of who's playing it, is there a good way to support the team in terms of, you know, watching online, buying jerseys? How can folks who are just general hockey fans be more supportive of the NWHL?
Well, you can always watch games online. I will say they are free broadcast on NWHL Cross Ice Pass, which is through YouTube, so there's no, you know, no charge or anything like that. So even just that is a simple way to show support. Just watch the games and be active on social media. You know, let people know, hey, the Buttes did this last night, or the Riveters are doing amazing against the Boston Pride. I will say, of course, there's also the financial side of things. You can always buy merchandise on the NWHL's website. They also have a donation page where you can donate to the NWHL Foundation if you're not interested in the merchandise side of things. So just little things like that. You know, obviously everyone can't necessarily afford to support it financially, but there's always watching the games, telling other people about the league, and sharing the things on social media. Like when you see my Victory Press pieces pop up, sharing those and helping them reach a wider audience.
Absolutely. And that's on us. We will do a better job of that this upcoming season, Melissa. And I just want to say personally, the sweaters that the NWHL has designed are all Buttes. Well, the Buffalo ones are Buttes.
Well done, Mike. Yeah, well done.
Thank you. But no, they are absolutely phenomenal. And I screwed up as I was introducing you, Melissa. Melissa's website is Burgess, B-U-R-G-E-S-S, Melissa.com. It is BurgessMelissa.com. She is at underscore,
respect the underscore,
Melissa Burgess over on the Twitters, and you can find all of her great articles over at the Victory Press. So Melissa, we can't say thank you enough for taking a few minutes out of your evening to join us here on the Cheaters Never Win podcast tonight, and we will do our best to be better NWHL fans next season.
All right, next season and whatever else is to come after that. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Thanks, Melissa. Thank you. Have a great night. Melissa was awesome.
Absolutely. And it was really good to have her on, not just because I think people will enjoy hearing about the NWHL and some of the clustery that surrounds the U.S. Women's National Team, but it was really good for me because I am admittedly ignorant to the NWHL. So it was really good to hear. And God, I can't believe I said congrats to Buffalo. That was weird.
It hurt. It hurt. But only a team from Buffalo could go 6-10-1 in the regular season and still win a championship.
Tis the beauty of single elimination tournaments. And I wanted to ask her, but I didn't want to get too in-depth in the future of the league when far more important things like the women's salaries are at play. And, you know, will there be a league in a few years? But I wonder with a situation like this year where Boston was just so dominant in the, I think, 17-18 game regular season and didn't win, if it may go to a format where the championship game turns into a best of three championship round, you know, to kind of make it a little bit more than just you didn't have it that night.
Yeah, it definitely has to be more than that. A team that currently doesn't have it but is also not losing it, 4 minutes, 20 seconds left in the second period, Carolina and Montreal still deadlocked at une.
I know people will appreciate these live-ish in-game updates.
Absolutely correct. So, Derek, as we look past our last 3-0-1 stretch since we were last year behind the mics, it was Eric Staal Remembrance Night, because a former captain lollygagged his way back to the bench multiple times during a game, and the team he was on was not victorious in PNC Arena. Fortunately for us, he's no longer on our team, and while Minnesota's in a free fall, the Carolina Hurricanes were bolstered.
They were good that night. I'd say the Canes played even better Saturday night against Nashville. That was
fun.
That was a damn fun game. I mean, it's fun to see PK Subban, who...
Purnell.
You know, he may not be my favorite player, but he may be my favorite person in the NHL. Just seems like an awesome dude, and it seems like Nashville has embraced him for all his goofiness and his charity, and again, don't know him personally. He may have some issues that we don't know about, but from all outward appearances, just seems like a fantastic guy that any fan base should be very fortunate to cheer for.
And I also think it's funny that Nashville has a Weber on their team still, and he's not nearly as good. As I like to refer to him, Lesser Weber. I tell you what was interesting. One guy I watched for most of the night was Philip Forsberg. When he was on the ice at times, it almost looked like he was noticeably hurt. He had maybe a little dip to his shoulder. And then I was fortunate enough to be sitting with Canes prospects, Pat Clark, and we were talking about, he goes, yeah, he's hurt, but I've been watching him. He's always got this one shot in him per game, and it always seems to go in. And literally, power play, 2 minutes later, boom, Forsberg with the rifle.
It's amazing when I have sat next to, at Canes prospects, Pat Clark, the intricacies and the nuances that he points out. I know we were talking earlier about we're very lucky to have the 328 family that we do. But when I've sat next to him, he's like, hey, watch his footwork or watch this one little move that this guy does. And I'm like, man, you know this game just at a much more detailed level than I think I ever could. And I know it comes from with him years of playing and coaching and those sorts of things. But I always appreciate picking up on those things. So then it makes me become a better fan.
It could also be the future cirrhosis of the liver that you and I may be battling because of this team.
There may
have slowed down some of our hockey acuity. Philadelphia game, meh. At least we got a point in regulation, and then a valiant comeback against a scrappy little team down there in Florida.
Yeah, I'll take it. It was kind of like the 8-4 Islanders game, light. You know, it's like playing the Islanders, but with 30% less fat or less fun, however you want to look at it. But it was good to see the Canes bounce back from every time Florida scored, and thankfully we didn't have to bounce back after the last one, and we just put another one up, got that 4-3 win in regulation.
Yeah, it was very nice. So again, 3-0-1, 7 out of 8 possible points since the last time we were behind these mics. So we're hoping that continues because, again, we think it's going to be 9-1-1.
We don't think it's going to be.
Well, 9-1-1 would get us to 94 points, and we think 94 points could be the line. A team that is not going to reach 94 points this season and not make the playoffs for the first time in a long time, the Detroit Red Wings, who come to town on Monday and Tuesday night. For those of you who may be unaware, we do have a makeup game with the Detroit Islanders. Detroit Islanders?
No, I don't think Detroit, I think they're still on the mainland.
They are. Maybe they're just Islanders awful is what I'm thinking.
Mm.
But due to the Freon issue we had, 6 weeks or so back, we're going to have back-to-back games at home against the Detroit Red Wings. And there's no better person to talk to about those Red Wings than our buddy Prashant.
Cool.
And folks, we welcome back to the Cheaters Never Win podcast. I think we've had this guy on before, right?
I don't believe so, but you know what?
He showed up to a tailgate,
okay,
drank our beer, and left. Let's talk about that. Prashant Iyer from Winging It in Motown, also a good local boy, doing his postgraduate work, I believe, at the University of North Carolina, Cheater Hill. Prashant, welcome to the podcast. How are you, sir?
Doing well. How are y'all doing?
Man, we are good. We are good. Your Red Wings roll into town for two consecutive games next week. And it's been a tough season in Hockeyville. So talk to us a little bit about really what happened this season. Was this just the culmination of what was an unsustainable playoff run, or is this basically the Detroit Red Wings picking the wrong long-term general manager?
I think you ask a great question. I think for the large part, it is a culmination of having continued success. You know, when you are in the playoffs for such a long period of time, 25 years for the Wings, you know, you're always picking at the end of the rounds, and basically you're relying on hitting your late round picks, and that's what had sustained the Wings for so long. In 1989, you get Nick Lindstrom in the third round, Sergei Fedorov in the fourth round. You know, in 97, 98, you're hitting on Datsyuk in the sixth round. You're hitting on Henrik Zetterberg in the seventh round. That's what sustains a playoff streak like this. It's really a matter of luck. You know, some people can say they're a good drafting team or you did great. You know, if they really knew what those guys were going to be, you take them earlier. You can, say they took them earlier than anybody else. But sixth and seventh round gems don't necessarily grow on trees. So certainly a bit of luck for the Wings there. And I think you're finally seeing it run out as all the guys have left. You know, Lindstrom left a few years ago. Datsyuk left last year. Zetterberg's on his last legs. So you're really seeing the culmination of all of that come together. And the Wings simply, thanks in large part to an inept general manager, have not been able to put together the necessary pieces to keep this cycle going.
So what's the mood around Hockey Town? I know you're not there in Hockey Town, but you cover it. You have a lot of connections there. I mean, you guys obviously do have some good young talent. Dylan Larkin hasn't had the sophomore season, I would guess you would hope. But, you know, you've got a really speedy guy that no one can pronounce who puts up highlight reel plays every now and then. So how's it looking? You know, this season, obviously, the streak of playoffs is broken. But what's it looking like next season, the year after, and so on?
I think, you know, the mood, at least right now, is almost kind of like the five stages of grief. You know, there's a large period of denial in the early part of the season. Then there's a lot of anger when people kept talking about it. And, you know, I think right now the fans are in the depression / acceptance phase as we're winding down Joe Louis Arena and everybody's getting ready to transition to the new arena. I think everybody's now in that denial and acceptance that, yeah, we know we're bad. Stop talking about it. The problem is moving forward, it's not going to change for the next few years. They are so far behind the eight ball in terms of their salaries and the contracts they've got on the books. It's going to be a long road back for the Wings. And even the smartest of general managers isn't going to be able to turn this team around really any sooner than the next 3 years. So, you know, the advice I'd provide to Wings fans is buckle up. It's going to be a long ride. There's a number of bad contracts. The Wings are actually the highest cap hit in the NHL, and you're looking at finishing second to last in the East. That's not necessarily the combination you want. You know, moving forward, they're not in a position like a Carolina or an Arizona where you've got half the cap hit that the Wings have and are always in a position to add. The Wings are in the opposite. They need to sell, sell, sell. And the pieces they need to sell, unfortunately, are not very attractive pieces. So I think it's going to be a long road back for Detroit. Everyone's just going to need to buckle up and get used to it.
So who do you ship off to Arizona then to avoid the cap hit?
For me, it's Nick Cronwell. He's the first guy I'm going to ship off. You know, he's still got $4.75 million per season for the next 2 years. He has basically rendered himself a negative asset on the ice. He doesn't provide you anything at all. And the nice part that makes him attractive to Arizona is that his salary drops to $3.5 million next year and then $1.75 million the year after, although the cap hit remains high. So, you know, he's the perfect kind of guy you're going to use to get to the cap ceiling, and you just have him hang out on long-term injured reserve.
Well, you know, I don't know if you know this about GM Ron Francis, but he likes to take large inflated contracts from teams that used to be in the Central Division and then partner those contracts with, I don't know, young upcoming Euro players. Is there any way that Ken Holland, you know, in all honesty, the expansion draft is going to facilitate a lot of moves this year. And Vegas obviously has cap room. The Hurricanes do. Arizona does. And we're starting to see some unique moves made. Do you keep this primary core of Larkin and Athanseyu, I believe is how I've heard it pronounced?
I think it's Blessyu.
Gesundheit. Or maybe one of the guys we've coveted, maybe incorrectly coveted, but Tommy Tater. Are those the core pieces, or do you see some of those core pieces shipped out in an effort to get additional draft picks in the upcoming draft, as well as maybe help yourself rid of some bad contracts?
Yeah, I think Detroit has an interesting situation. For me, the four core forwards that I'm focusing on, Dylan Larkin, Andreas Athanasiou, Thomas Tatar, and then Anthony Mantha, I think those are the four guys you really key in on. Of those guys, I think the one most likely to move is Thomas Tatar, because Tater, for whatever reason, you know, the fan base has soured on him. And I don't necessarily understand why. You know, he's always been a positive impact player, whether you look at it from the box score, whether you look at it from a wins above replacement, goals above replacement, however you want to look at it. He's generally been exceptionally good for his value. I mean, he makes $2.75 million this year, and he's a restricted free agent again this offseason. So I think he's a guy who could be an attractive piece for the Wings to move. I also think he would be a really attractive piece for a team looking to take the next step, or for a contender looking to add a guy who's 26 years old and can be an elite possession player.
But he's only 5'10", so how good can he really be?
Yeah, right. I mean, short players don't do anything.
No, certainly not. So the other familiarity that you have with this team is our current head coach, Bill Peters, now in his third year. I don't know if you can really compare and contrast the success that he's had versus Blashill in his first year in Detroit. But recently, you know, Peters got some heat for what he said about Eddie Lack. And Mike and I were talking off air before this that, man, Eddie's performed really well. And maybe Bill Peters knows this team and is kind of playing the media and playing this game. Are there any things that maybe we haven't seen his whole bag of tricks, or anything that you know from his tenure in Detroit that may be enlightening to the Canes fan base?
Yeah, I mean, Bill Peters, while in Detroit, was a phenomenal assistant coach. You know, he was responsible for the Wings' penalty kill. He was responsible for the defensemen. I think he did an outstanding job with the group of guys he had, you know, back in that 2011 time period, which is when he got hired, until he left in 2014. You know, I think for him, he was never really, you know, much in the limelight, because when you're coaching next to Mike Babcock, you're never really in the limelight. But he was always the guy who was able to get the most out of his players and always find ways to get the most out of his players via the system that he employed. He was able to, you know, basically recognize that the Wings group that he had was a very poor skating group, aside from Nick Lindstrom and at the time Nick Cronwell. You didn't really have a lot of good puck movers. You had, you know, guys like, you know, Jonathan Erickson after hip surgery. He didn't really have many standout skaters, and he was able to come up with a defensive strategy in conjunction with Babcock, where they were able to limit all of the neutral zone traffic, and they did a really, really good job slowing teams through the ice. And so I think he's a great tactician, and I think you've seen that in Carolina, where he's always had great Corsi teams but hasn't necessarily had the corresponding success. And I think for him, it's a lot of frustration with the goaltending, which has been the big story in Carolina, I guess, the last 2 years with Ward and Lack. you know, I guess that their relative inconsistency may be the one thing that's holding that team back. And so I don't know if that was just him losing his cool. He never really did lose his cool in Detroit. But I think it would be a mistake for anybody to get too heated at Peters, given how brilliant of a tactician I think he really can be.
Well, you mentioned tactician, and then you also mentioned some fancy stats in there. And for those who may not know, Prashant, you are one of the lead guys we like to read in the fancy stats community. We're not going to say it out loud, but I believe Catalytics may have a slight crush on you. That's cool. That's cool. But we would not be doing our job if we didn't ask you a couple of fancy stats based questions. So this one from a listener, this is at Bruce Springsteen. War, what is it good for?
Yeah, I think you've seen the rise of war or wins above replacement in baseball over the last decade. And for the longest time, there had been several stabs at it, but none were really great models. Partly because how do you equate the value of a forward to a defenseman to a goaltender? How do you adjust for the multitude of factors that happen on ice? How do you appropriately regress and account for different variables such as coaching, teammates, opponents? It made the creation of a war model very challenging for the sport of hockey. I think right now we have the best attempt at it thus far. From Don't Tell Me About Hart, or Dawson Spriggings is his real name. His most recent war model does a fantastic job, I think, of accounting for the differences in even strength offense, the ability to draw penalties, the ability to take penalties. It's really accounted for a lot of the things we consider to be repeatable skills. And I think right now, based on the predictive testing that he showed in his article, it's the best war model we've had to date. I still don't think it's perfect. And, the area where it's going to be lacking is an evaluation of defense, particularly defense for forwards, and to a lesser degree, defense for defensemen, given that we still struggle to quantify, how responsible a single player is for events against in relation to how much that is just the coach's system. But otherwise, I think if you're using that model, I think you're on the right track. And I think he does a great job with it. And you can find all of his data available on Google Sheets. If you just go to his Twitter handle at DTM About Hart, he's posted all of his data from this year and all the way back to 2008 in Google Sheets that everyone can just play around with.
Yeah, we at DTM About Hart, Don't Tell Me About Hart, absolutely one of the best analytics follows out there. We are thoroughly thoroughly enjoying what he does.
So, Prashant, last question from me here. Last season we talked with, I don't know if he's your good friend or not, but it's certainly a cohort at Wing It in Motown, Kyle. And we talked a lot about the Dylan Larkin, Noah Hanifin matchup, which we like to coin Larkafin, which caught on really, really well. He was very much on the Dylan Larkin train last year. We justifiably were on the Noah Hanifin trade. If you had to choose one of those players today, who you got?
That's an excellent question. That is really, really tough. For me, I was a little less on the Larkin train last year because his shooting percentage was just so unsustainable. And if you weren't really sure where he was going to land. The same time, Hanifin hasn't particularly impressed me more than, Slavin. Slavin's really the guy I like. So I think if I'm still picking Larkin today because I'm more impressed with Slavin than Hanifin thus far. And I think if you had made this question Slavin versus Larkin, that would have been a lot tougher. And I think it would have actually taken Slavin. Hanifin thus far has not particularly impressed. And then when you go to grade him out, and that war model that we were just talking about, he's actually a negative impact player this season. Granted, he's still very young, has a lot of potential to develop, but I do think Larkin brings a little bit more value at this point in time.
Well, we are, I think anytime you place a player defensively and give them the pairing choice of either Klaus Dahlback, Matt Tennyson, or Ryan Murphy, your impact is going to be negative regardless. Noah's been a lot better since he's been getting playing time with either Justin Faulk or Brett Pesce, or as we like to say, Brett Pesce,
Brent Peach.
Yeah. So
Pesci's been really good this year. So.
Well, that's what happens when you put him with Jacob Slavin, because Jacob Slavin is our daddy. Actually, Jacob Slavin, where the second C stands for quality. Prashant, we cannot say thank you enough for taking some time out of your day to join us here on the Cheaters Never Win podcast. Hey, it's the first time doing this. You can find Prashant. He is at Prashant_Iyer, I believe. He is at Iyer, I-Y-E-R, respect the underscore.
Respect it.
Prashant. And you can also find him over at Winging It in Motown, or as we like to call it, Weem. So, Prashant, thank you so much for joining us, sir. We wish your Detroit Red Wings nothing but the worst of luck when they come for back-to-back consecutive games here at the PNC Arena, so that way the Carolina Hurricanes can only have their hopes smashed the following week when we hit the road and completely just lose any momentum
and,
that we have.
And we'll do our best to have Freon in the building that night.
We'll do our best.
I was going to say, I'm gonna be there Monday and Tuesday, so let's make sure there's some Freon in the building.
We'll have some Freon in the building, and we'll have some cold beers. Come on by, Prashant. We'll take care of everybody.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Speaking of beer, Derek, we're but a measly 11 games. Actually, after tonight's game, we will be 9 games away from the end-of-season tailgate, which has come to have somewhat legendary status around the hallowed halls of PNC Arena.
Our buddy Canalytics said it earlier today. He almost looks at the opening and closing tailgates of the season as holidays, and they are truly fantastic. You know, we've been doing it a lot on this week's podcast, but you know, we have our 328 family, and we have our extended family of friends and people who love hockey, love a good cold beverage, and just enjoy a good tailgate, who come out, join us for a lot of fun before the game. And we had an awesome crew at the opening night tailgate this year. I would love to have at least as awesome of a crew for the closing tailgate of the year. And that is why I am working diligently to get food and beer sponsors for this tailgate, so that less people need to worry about showing up with anything.
Yes, so we are actively, and while we can't announce anything yet, we are fairly certain we have secured a beer sponsor for the end of season tailgate. It would be a local Raleigh brewery that we are huge fans of.
I hold in high regard.
And we also are working on potentially someone who has provided us with food in the past, who said, hey, maybe they want to provide a little something. So we may throw down with all sorts of good stuff. Just folks who want to celebrate the end of the hockey season together. So a lot more details on that coming, Derek. But I believe there are some details that we haven't shared with the people.
Like?
Live in-game update. With 40 seconds left in the second period, a soft backhand goal let in by Carey Price. And it is 2-1 Carolina Hurricanes off the stick of Lee Stempniak and off the leg of random Canadian.
Yes, I didn't know his name either.
Pot Van.
Sure.
Richard.
Okay.
Wah. Somebody.
Yeah, I mean, one of those guys.
Yeah, one of those guys.
Jeff Halpern.
So 2-1 Canes after 2 in Montreal. Hope lives, Derek. And you know where else people find hope?
Where at?
They find hope that we will one day read their cheat mail. Gotta go get some cheat mail.
Man, we got a backing track of snaps now.
I know.
Look at us. And that Patreon money coming in large. May I ask you the first question?
Please do, sir.
And I have an answer for it as well, but I want to hear yours first. This is from Kevin Kohler at KohlerKO8. If Elias Lindholm wore a beer, what beer would he be?
Ooh, good question. If Elias Lindholm were a beer, what beer would he be? Elias Lindholm would be Stella Artois.
Go on.
He's never your first choice.
Okay.
He's a really good complimentary beer to a meal.
Okay.
He's not that one main thing, but if that's what you've got to have all night, that's pretty good quality.
Mm-hmm. So I was thinking in terms of how he's been this season more so than who he is. And I was thinking he's a really nice stout that you left in the fridge too long, but you really want to taste it. So you crack it open and you go, it's a little cold. It's not that great to start. So you walk away. You kind of wonder, do I want to keep drinking this or not? but you just let it sit there because you have a feeling it's going to get better, right? I bought a good beer.
Uh-huh.
And then as it warms up, it starts to get a little tastier. You get a little bit more nuance on it. And then as it just keeps going on and the experience gets better, you're like, man, this is actually a really good beer. I'm glad I was patient with it.
I would have yelled at that beer to get warmer for about 15 minutes. Do something.
Warm the hell up.
Warm up.
Give me your flavors.
Give me all your flavors. Let's go to, let's see, let's go to our buddy Jonathan Wagner. He is at NHL Canes fans. Which do you prefer, trading for Marc-Andre Fleury or signing someone like Scott Darling? And which do you see as more realistic?
I would prefer signing Scott Darling, and I see that as more realistic.
I believe also Scott Darling could be very realistic. I'm a little bit worried that Scott Darling is going to become this year's Freddie Anderson in terms of money and term, though.
I could see a very similar 5x5 deal.
Yeah. I'm thinking more along the lines of what's it going to take to get Yaro Halak off the island and out of the AHL prior to the expansion draft. That seems like much more of a Ron Francis move.
That was not one of the options, though, Mike.
Well, I'm a grown ass man, and I do what I want to do.
That's fair.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Speaking of friends of the podcast, this is from Will Luber. Obviously, the playoffs are a long shot, still a chance, but do the Canes finally make it next year?
Absolutely, I guarantee it. Go ahead and mark this podcast right now. I guarantee the Hurricanes make the playoffs next year.
I feel pretty confident. I don't know that I go guarantee confident, considering
I'm probably going to delete this podcast, you know, off the podcast listing if we don't make it next year.
That's fair.
Yeah, I got that. I got that going for me, which is nice. This one's from at Carson Brewer. I think Carson is actually a first-time cheat mail person. So, Carson, long-time cheat mailer, first-time answerer. What do the Slavin, Pesci, and Hanifin new contracts look like?
So that'll be after next season that they their new contracts will kick in.
Correct.
I would say in order, Slavin will get the most money, followed by Hanifin, followed by Pesci. I don't know what they'll look like. I imagine Slavin will probably get the longest term. Pesci get the shortest term, kind of a bridge deal sort of thing. Man, that's a really good question. I would love to get somebody's insights, you know, a Mr. Workrate who knows the CBA well, a Canes Prospects who, you know, knows the cap hits a little better, to get some more insight. But God, that's a good question, Mike. I am totally unprepared, even though that question was sent in hours ago.
Jacob Slavin will get a long-term contract. I think Jacob Slavin will sign a 7-year deal worth $7 million.
Hold on. $7 million per?
$7 million per. Seven by seven as the new captain of the Carolina Hurricanes.
So he's getting more than Falk.
Yes, because Falk signed a cheap deal early. I believe... Noah Hanifin will get a bridge deal, 3 years, $275 million. I think Brett Pesci will get a bridge deal, 3 years, $2.5 million. Okay. I think you back up the Brinks truck to Jacob Slavin.
I can't argue that. I think seven's going to be high though, but
I think he's going to be one of the most sought. He would be one of the most sought after, young defensemen. You know. Big, mobile.
Everything good about him is consistent.
Yes, we love him. Because the second C definitely stands for quality.
Oh, here you go. This is from Ethan Clark at EthanClark04. Does the PNC Arena have a cool nickname like the old igloo that you referenced earlier, Mike, in Pittsburgh, or the Rock in New Jersey?
Good question, Ethan. I don't know if it has a cool nickname. We've often referred to it as the ATM. We also, you know, it's been named many things. It was the Raleigh Entertainment and Sports Arena, also known as the ESA, and then we were the RBC Center, and now we're the PNC Arena.
I do like to think that the PNC stands for Paul's Not Coaching.
Oh, I want to hug you right now.
I cannot take credit for that. Oh, this, you can't see this, but this is a really tender embrace.
It was tender. It was nice.
I can't take credit for that. Somebody also jokingly mentioned when we became the PNC Arena, it could stand for perennial non-contender.
Ooh, that hurts.
I thought that was cruel.
That hit close to home. Derek, last question from this mic. Which young defenseman gets dealt outright or packaged with draft picks for a true number one center in the offseason?
Hayden Fleury.
Interesting. So, yeah, he's a former first-round draft pick, hasn't cracked the lineup. I don't think Hayden Fleury gets you a true number one center. You know, hey, the question was to get you a true number one center.
Or packaged with draft picks.
So Hayden Fleury plus this year's 11th pick in the draft for a first-line center. Or how about we just keep everybody and we offer sheet Dostjem and Gretzky, Louis Dreisaitl.
Someone mentioned earlier, I don't remember who it was, but they suggested before July 1st, so that way you don't have to offer sheet, offer Edmonton this year and next year's first for Dreisaitl.
Does German Gretzky be so good?
I would totally do it.
As would I. Derek, you know what else we should do? We should talk about this just beautiful, beautiful beverage you have sitting over there in a glass.
Especially because we didn't do a beer review last week. That's totally my fault. And I was drinking this delicious Bond Brothers Duality of Funk Brett IPA that you would have hated and I truly loved. And Bond Brothers was named USA Today's best new brewery in America.
Congratulations to Bond Brothers.
By
go
popular
Raleigh.
Vote. But it's still a hell of an award. And there's one reason to go to downtown Cary. Go on a night when Pittsburgh's playing. It'll probably be less busy.
There you go.
But this beer, as next week does kick off North Carolina Beer Month, I'm going early because there's always good reasons to drink North Carolina beer. And this one is just a beautiful Russian Imperial Stout from Highland Brewing up in Asheville. You know where they are. Called Imperium. And this is part of their Warrior Series, which they say is big beer in small batches. For those of you who don't know, I may have mentioned on the podcast before, but in the last year or so, Highland has gotten a new head brewer who has really, she's inserted a lot of life and experiments and just really, really good beer to Highland from what was, you know, not the most boundary-pushing lineup of beers. So this Russian Imperial Stout, it says it is made more irresistible by the addition of hand-cut vanilla beans. I don't know if hand-cutting adds more flavor. Toasted coconut, and octane coffee. It is pitch black, velvet smooth, and what I loved about this label, aggressively roasty. It is 8.5% alcohol, and when it says pitch black, ladies and gentlemen, Mike held this up to a light and went, oh yeah, that's good.
Oh yeah, that's good.
That passes the patented Flanagan light pass through a test.
Woohoo!
It smells just... It's roasty. It doesn't say chocolate on the label, but I do get a lot of chocolate out of this. I do get vanilla as well. I don't get much coconut on the nose, but man, on the palate, this beer is so, so damn good. I get a lot of that coffee. There's a nice texture to this beer where it's not as smooth and like, I don't know, flat's not a great word, but flat like a Guinness, but it's also not too carbonated. It's got a really, really nice texture to it. Get a lot of good chocolate, a lot of coffee, a lot of vanilla, and there is a hint of that coconut to kind of dry it out just a little bit. Much like how I said Elias Lindholm would be, this beer has gotten even better as it has warmed up. This is one of the better things I've had from Highland in a while. I almost always enjoy their beers. This one I would highly recommend. Seek it out. This 12-ounce bottle set me back in the neighborhood of $3. I forget if it was $2.29 or $2.99 or $3.39. Either way, in the neighborhood of $3 for what I think is a truly fantastic adult beverage.
I'm going to be honest with the folks, Derek. Although I have kind of nixed the beer from the diet, I couldn't help myself. I had to have a little cross the lips, and that was just delicious.
Yeah, it's really good. In the mid palate, it's almost a little like sweet and chocolatey, but it finishes dry enough where it doesn't become a problem, and it's not like a Southern Tier chocolatey beer where it's just like, man, that is cloying. Where I could see this beer being even more interesting is if they put a little bit of chili in it,
or maybe this would be a good beer with a nice chili. Might be getting a little bit too warm for that, but that's okay. You know, if the weather's not great this weekend, you know, we could make chili and take it out to the tailgate we're having on Sunday.
Wait, hold on, Mike, there's not a hockey game on Sunday. Why are we going to be tailgating?
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, WWE and the road to WrestleMania are once again live at PNC Arena. And, Derek, it is my chance to take my son to his first WWE event, and John Cena's gonna be there.
I think right now you may be more excited than your son, and that's awesome. I can't wait for that. If you are listening to this podcast and you're going to that event on Sunday, please come tailgate with us. Come say hello. Also, if you haven't checked it out, we talked about the work the 328 family puts out. JC and Tom, Mr. Workrate, they do a fine wrestling podcast called Cheaters Never Pin. Check it out, cheatersneverpin.com. I enjoy their work a whole hell of a lot.
Yeah, their podcast is coming along much more quickly than the original incantation of this one.
Oh, dear God.
Over
never
on the Twitters,
find those files.
They are at CheatersNVRPin. We are very happy with all the stuff that they're doing. Again, thank you to our webmaster and rookie watcher, at Kane's Prospects, Pat Clark, for helping us get all of the new stuff up on the website, including the cool new buttons that you see for Become a Patreon and for shopping on Amazon.com. Again, if you go to Amazon, go to section328.com, click on the button before you go, and that'll throw a few pennies, you know, a few ducats, whatever the case may be, into the 328 coffers, so that way we can try to keep improving the site, improving our writers, and just improving everything overall, and we really do appreciate you guys taking the time out of your day to listen to this, the Cheaters Never Win podcast. Hopefully you found us over on Twitters. We're on the Twitters at section_328.
Respect the underscore tonight, for the love of God.
Tonight, everybody respected the underscore. Prashant respected the underscore. Melissa respecting the underscore.
Respect.
So much respect on it. We're on Snapchat and Instagram and things that we very rarely ever use. Facebook, we do a lot of stuff on Facebook Live when we want to get goofy and have a little fun. You know, you can definitely find us over at facebook.com/section328. Again, that's ran by Raleigh Monkey, so it's kind of the nicer, sweeter, less snarky version of 328, and we thank her for helping us out with that.
Absolutely.
And we thank you, as always, for listening, rating, reviewing, subscribing, wherever you may find podcasts, and we hope you enjoyed this week's episode. We will not be back next week. You will be back next week. The real world job's going to take me away for a couple of days.
No!
But rumors of my death will have been greatly exaggerated, but I hope you and the rest of the crew, whomever is filling in for me, you guys do a great job, and I will see you back on row C upon my return for the final two games of the season before the Carolina Hurricanes make the playoffs. There, I said it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Until then, I'm holding out hope.
I have come to terms with reality.
And my name's Mike.
This is Derek.
We're out of here.
Pyah!